This is episode 287 of Jumble Think.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Jumble Think, where we interview dreamers, makers, innovators, and influencers all about their journey of turning dreams and ideas into reality. Along the way, we're going to share some tips on how you can turn your own dreams and ideas into reality, too. On today's show, our guest is Jen Lederer. More about Jen in a moment. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime fan, if you haven't subscribed to Jumble Think already, head on over to your favorite app to listen to podcasts, search for Jumble Think, and click that subscribe button. Now let's jump into today's conversation with Jen Lederer. Hey there, welcome to Jumble Think. My name is Michael Woodward. I am your host. We have a great show lined up for you today. Before we get rolling, we want to thank our friends over at Penji for sponsoring today's show. Penji is your source for unlimited graphic design at a low subscription rate. As a listener of Jumble Think, they're going to give you 15% off your first month when you head on over to Penji, PENJI.co, and use the code Jumble. So head on over and start getting the design you want. We have a killer conversation lined up for you today. Our guest is Jen Lederer. This interview was recorded live at Propelify, which is the Propelify Innovation Festival. Happens outdoors in New Jersey overlooking Manhattan. Happened to be like the first real day of fall where it was super cold, windy, and rainy. So you're going to hear that in the background. You're going to hear Propelify happening in the background. So check them out, propelify.com. We also want to thank our friends over at Podcast Row who hosted the actual interviews at Propelify, and you can check them out, podcast-row.com. All right, so our guest today is Jen Lederer. Who is Jen? Jen is a motivational comedian, a producer, and founder of Jen Lederer Productions. Jen's signature brand of motivational comedy harnesses the power of laughter to help her audience laugh their way to a breakthrough. JLP produces visually dynamic and engaging digital content designed to capture the truth in every story. She's passionate about helping creative entrepreneurs cultivate their own unique power, perspective, and impact on the world in whatever way they're meant to be and do it. Jen's work has been featured by Forbes, Huffington Post, Yale, Google Headquarters, Inspiring Lives Magazine, and comedy clubs around New York City and the Northeast. Now let's go ahead and join our conversation with today's guest, Jen Lederer. We are with Jen Lederer.
You got it.
I got it right.
You nailed it.
Nice. And we are at Propelify with Podcast Row in this very, very brisk, damp, fall, almost winter-esque weather today.
Yes. Just outside. Yesterday I was saying, why is it so hot? And now...
It's like 90-something, right?
Right.
And now it's like 60-something.
Right.
Or 50-something. Or
so, fall in New York.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's great to have you on the show.
It's fun to be here.
Checking out what you're doing before we got on the last couple of days, just doing some research and really excited about this conversation. You have an interesting journey, though.
Yeah.
And I want to talk a little bit about the journey before we talk about what you're doing today. And you do comedy.
I do.
You do production.
Yeah.
You do some other things. You're launching a video series on YouTube and some other things. So you do a lot in the creative space.
Yes.
But you have an interesting journey that got you there.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to us about that.
Yeah, it's been a journey of resistance, right? There's a part of me that has always been drawn to the stage, drawn to the spotlight.
Yeah.
But then there was like an equally big part of me that wanted to sabotage any opportunity to really claim that.
Yeah.
I moved to New York in 2007 as a dancer.
Yeah.
Got my BA in jazz.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, this is it. I'm going to move to New York. I'm going to take over Broadway. I'm going to be on every stage. Like, done.
Yeah.
And then I got here and I would not go to class. I would go to auditions, get a callback, and not go to the callback. Like, all the things.
Self-sabotaging.
I mean, come on, to a T. And so I walked away from dance because, number one, I wasn't showing up to it. So that's like a huge sign.
Why do you think you weren't? Do you think it was that you didn't enjoy it? Was it a fear of what this meant for your life? What was it that was kind of setting yourself up for failure there?
This was only discovered through hindsight and many therapy hours.
Yeah.
I was scared. I was scared to be seen. I didn't feel like I was worthy of it. Yeah. I was scared of what would happen if I garnered too much attention, too soon, you know, whatever it was. I just had this underlying fear that I wouldn't be able to handle it.
Yeah.
And there's a way in which I think that self-sabotage is misguided love.
Yeah.
And I think that my soul was really looking out for me.
Yeah.
Because it would have been too much too soon. I needed to do a lot of inner healing on some of the trauma from childhood to be able to move into it in a powerful way. Because if you're looking for validation in the outside world while pursuing an entertainment career, what a cocktail.
Yeah.
What a cocktail.
And we've seen a lot of stories of how that pans out.
Right.
And we continue to see it with every Disney star.
Every single one, that's right.
Every child Disney star and every musician that was big at 16.
That's right.
And it's just too much too soon, and there's a lot of issues. And growing up, that has to happen for to have that stability of certainty of who you are.
Exactly.
So you do that, and you're kind of like, hey, something's not right here.
Yeah.
Walk us through what was next.
Every job imaginable.
Now, one of the things I read was that you actually had a job in Times Square selling tickets to comedy shows.
Yes.
I've met those people.
Be nice to them.
As I walk through.
Be nice to them, Michael.
Like, I'm like, I don't want a ticket. I already know where I'm going.
Of course you don't, Michael. But
but I'm not here to be a tourist either.
That's
so,
right. Yeah. That's right. There were plenty of people that did want to go to comedy.
Yeah.
And boy, did that job teach me sales.
Yeah.
And not being afraid to hear no.
Yeah.
Not being afraid to go after what it is I wanted, which was money at the time. It was not comedy. I wasn't interested in comedy at that time. I just was interested in paying the bills.
It's a good thing to worry about.
Yeah, you know, I've heard they're important.
Yeah.
So I tried
to some people think.
Fulfill that.
Yeah.
But it was on that job that I met a person who was a New Yorker and not interested in comedy whatsoever, but I got him to stop.
Yeah.
And I got him to listen to me.
Yeah.
And he said, "What the hell is your sales background? Like, who are you, and why are you doing this job?"
Yeah.
And he had a friend who ran a talent management company and needed help.
Wow.
And he said, "Would you be interested in talking?" I said, "I am on the street selling comedy tickets. I am interested in whatever the opportunity you have."
Yeah.
And within 2 weeks, I was working for that management company, and within a year and a half, I was running it.
Wow.
I took it over and made it my own for 5 years.
Yeah.
And that's where I cut my business teeth. That's where I understood the business of show.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of the thing that a lot of people miss. They see the glamour. They're like, oh, Hollywood's so sexy and appealing and beautiful, or like television or you know, cinema or Broadway. It's just all, but it's a business. And people don't realize that you have to run it as a business. It is your business.
It 100% is. And talent is almost the last factor that goes into the decisions being made by the decision makers, which is, again, another reason why you have to be solid.
Yeah.
You cannot be looking for validation, because you're not getting the job or not getting the job because of talent. There's a million other pieces to look at.
Yeah.
You know, and you can see that on TV as well. It's not the most talented people always.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and talent does not equal success.
There's a person that popped in my head. I probably shouldn't mention her name.
Okay, maybe an entire family? I don't know.
Well, yeah. Yeah, an entire
we try and keep up. All I can say is I try and keep up.
Lots and lots of housewives that should be out of business.
That too.
I love that you continue to persevere when other people would just kind of say, you know, maybe this isn't the life for me.
Yeah.
And they would just go back and settle into something that was like, at least I'm getting paid. At least I have a job. You know, I can settle down and do whatever I want to do. And and there's a lot of people that choose that route. They're not happy with their jobs. They're not happy with the choices that they've made. But they're satisfied because it gives them what they think they want.
Mm-hmm.
How did you navigate not selling out to that?
Oh, I wouldn't consider it a sellout. I think that a lot of people should take that route, and it's very fulfilling for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I tried to take that route many times. I wanted to be satisfied in that way, because it's seemed easier.
Yeah.
And it would have been nice to just be fulfilled with wanting to check all the boxes that you're told you should check to equal happiness.
Yeah.
And I have a very deep burning fire in my belly that wouldn't shut up and wouldn't let me, number one, stay. As soon as a job got out of alignment and it was clear this is not it, whether it was someone else I'm working for or my own business that I'm running, I've learned, listen to that whisper and start your exit strategy immediately.
Yeah.
And it got... It's gotten easier every time. It's not like totally comfortable even now. But I've learned that I can trust myself. I, no matter where I land, whether this next move is going to, quote, work out, I've got this. Yeah. I can figure out the next step.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about now that you've found comedy as a core of what you do. It's not the only thing you do, but it's kind of the
it
center
is the core,
hub.
For sure.
How did you find that? How did you go... This is me.
Yeah, again, I fought it for a long time, Michael. I was.
Was it out of fear that you fought it, or was it out
I
of like?
I think so. I struggle a lot with caring about what people think of me and being very aware of like when people are looking at me. A lot of insecurities.
Yeah.
And there's no room for ego in comedy.
Yeah.
Like, you get on stage and you will be judged.
Yeah.
That's the job.
Yeah.
You stand there and you get judged. Yeah. And the judge factor is clear. They laughed or they didn't.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it's very kind of black and white. But then comedy itself is anything but black and white. It's very gray.
Right.
You can like one form of comedy and not another. That doesn't mean that that person wasn't funny.
Yeah.
It means that that's not your type of comedy.
Yeah.
And that's part of what I love digging into. And what is important for a comedian, you have to know your own perspective.
Yeah.
You can't just know how to formulate a joke.
Yeah.
You know, that's the mechanism of it, but your perspective is what people come for.
Yeah.
Not, oh, look at that well-crafted joke she just did.
Well, and I think that's the thing. The perception is that funny people make good comedians, and they don't.
No, and as soon as you try and be funny, you're whatever you do, do not try and be funny. Just try... Don't try anything. Just be yourself.
I'm going to pivot here a little bit into the world of comedy, and then we're going to step back out into your journey again. You know, for you, you just said that there are going to be people that connect with your comedy, and there are going to be people who don't.
Yeah.
But you still, as a comedian, when you're standing up on a stage, have to figure out how you're going to connect with people that aren't resonating with what you're saying. You're reading the room, and maybe the room is chilled to the topic or whatever you're doing. You're doing stand-up at a club or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you navigate pivoting in those moments of saying, how do I get them on my team here? How do I get them to be a part of the story I'm telling so that they're engaged and that they go, nah, this is a comedian I can buy into?
I don't know that you're always needing them to be on your side or to be on your team. You can lean in, right? If you're bombing bad and the room is just not vibing on you, but normally the material hits, you're like, no, this is good. Like, I know this joke. It's working. It's just a weird room. You just always speak on the truth.
Okay.
You find the truth in the room and you speak on it.
Yeah.
Because everyone can feel the truth.
Yeah.
So it's no longer, do you like me? Do you think I'm funny?
Yeah.
It's, hey, can we all recognize what's happening here?
Yeah.
Can you all just meet me here in this present moment?
Yeah.
That's how you, quote, win them over, is just bring them back to right now. Get them here because they've left.
All right. So we're going to jump back to your story now.
Okay.
I want to know, how did you actually end up and land in comedy then?
Okay. So, Michael, I painted an owl.
Yes.
I painted an owl in an intuitive painting class.
Okay. Well, some people are going to go, like,
what
is
that?
That?
It's as weird as it sounds.
Okay.
So you sit down with your watercolors and your paintbrushes, and we were given a word, and the word was curiosity.
Okay.
And so that was the only direction we were given, and they said, start painting. And so I was painting and painting and painting. I had no idea what was coming through. And when I stepped back and it was done, I saw an owl.
Mm.
There's this owl that looked like he just came back from an ayahuasca trip, like very... John Lennon glasses.
Yeah.
Very strange.
I've actually seen the painting. And
okay.
Kind of looks A little bit of Cousin Ed in there.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. How fun is that? There was a lot going on.
Yeah.
And I finished the painting and I signed the bottom and I heard a voice, Michael, this is a true story, that said, you have to start comedy.
Okay.
You have to start. I had been dancing around it as a motivational speaker for 5 years.
So it wasn't something completely out of the blue. It's something that you had kind of touched through motivational speaking.
Yes. And I've always been drawn to comedy, but I was like, I'm not that masochistic. I was in point shoes for a good part of my life. Like, that's the highest level of masochism one could want, right?
Yeah.
No, there was more for me to find. And the room that event happened in had a fake brick wall behind me.
Yeah.
So I turned around.
Which is famous in comedy.
Right. Just weird brick walls all the time.
Yeah.
And I knew the person who booked the room.
Yeah.
And I had a following. I'd been on stage. I'm a performer. I'm like, you know what? I can do this.
Yeah.
And I always only do things on my own terms.
Yeah.
So I knew if I'm going to get into comedy, I'm going to do it by producing my own shows first.
Yeah.
Because I needed more than 5 minutes at a time to develop this thing that I was calling motivational comedy, which doesn't exist, isn't a thing.
Yeah.
Although I believe most comedians are motivational comedians because it's simply inviting people into a new perspective.
Yeah, and I'm going to pause you there because I want to tease that out a little bit before we do the big reveal on what it is.
Spoiler alert, you guys, I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's coming, but we're not going to give it all away right up front. So.
Okay, so I painted the owl. I got the news from the universe that it was time. I booked that room. They gave me a 3-month residency.
Okay.
So I did 3 shows in that space. And it was a space of co-working, co-living, international entrepreneurs.
Okay.
And I was like, this is my perfect trial audience.
Yeah.
I didn't want an audience of drunk guys in a basement at midnight to find out if motivational comedy would work.
Probably not the right audience.
No, not the right testing area.
Yeah.
So I just had to trust that this crazy vision that I had was going to work. And the first 3 shows were crazy successful.
Oh, cool.
And everyone around me that knew me very well, that I trust a lot and will tell me if I'm off base with what I think I'm good at, they all were very supportive. So
that's awesome.
I just...
And you need those people.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. All right, so you land in comedy.
Landed.
And now you're starting some things.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to mention them real quick, and then we're going to talk about them a lot in segment 2. You have a new show, Jen and Marla's Ageless Adventures, on YouTube coming out.
Yes.
You have a new project, Subtext, which is coming in November in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And also you're doing motivation comedy.
Yeah.
And you're bringing it all together to create business.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever think when you started out that, hey, I can create a business where I'm kind of flowing outside of the traditional entertainment space?
No.
Because yeah, I mean, like, you go, hey, I'm going to go to Broadway and be a dancer.
Uh-huh.
You're working within the system. You're playing by their rules, but you're defining your own rules on this journey now.
Yeah, and I didn't necessarily want it to be that way.
Like,
I keep wanting to be, quote, normal.
Okay.
But every time I try and go that direction, it's very painful. It never works, right? The 5-step formulas that work for everyone else. I'm like, what is wrong with me?
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with me. I'm just meant to be in my own lane.
Yeah.
And be on the cusp of several different industries at once. And when I look at who I've been in my life, all of my life, I've always been on the cusp of all different groups, having all different kinds of friends, being involved in different things in school and after school. And I was never in one area. I never had one look. Like, I would dress different depending on my mood. Like, I've always been a bit of a shapeshifter.
Yeah.
And I had to question for a while, is that a strength that is really me wanting and having all of these different sides of myself that want to be expressed? Or am I a chameleon that is influenced by everyone around me and I don't really know myself?
Yeah, you haven't figured out who you are.
Right, and so I looked at it as a weakness for a very long time until I learned it's a superpower if you know how to use it.
So do you think that chameleon kind of adapting to the situation is who you are? Or do you think that you're kind of finding that it allowed you to learn so that you could be prepared to step into what you're supposed to do?
Yes, and.
Okay.
As they say in the comedy world. I hindsight is 2020.
Yeah.
And this year specifically, I am seeing a lot of the dots being connected. Mm-hmm. A lot of the dots that felt very random to me.
Yeah.
Going from selling comedy tickets on the street to running a talent management company to coaching to speaking. I'm like, I am all over the place.
Yeah.
I am all over the place. But now I look at what I'm doing and there's no way I could have gotten here without every single one of those pieces.
Right. Right. And I think that that's what some people forget in the journey, especially I would consider you an entrepreneur.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that a lot of people write off people because they're a comedian. So they're a comedian. Well, they're still an entrepreneur.
Yes.
Or they're an actor or a dancer or whatever mm-hmm. it is when it comes to the entertainment industry. And mm-hmm. and they go, oh, they're just that. And mm-hmm. they don't see the full picture. And we talked about that a little bit at the beginning about the business of.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting to me is that there are more and more people who are saying entrepreneurship has been poorly defined. What we've said is it has to be the startup, a guy who does startups that become this, and then they launch, and then there's this pattern of success, and then they're covered by Inc. magazine, and this happens and that happens. And we have this picture of what that success of entrepreneurship looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fresh and good to see people like you and other people's. And I think they're coming. I guess I'm in that space too.
Yes,
coming
you are.
To the surface of saying, no, it's about a journey. And the pieces mm-hmm. don't always make sense, but they come together to create something beautiful.
Yes. And I think what you touched on is important. There's so many creatives who are convinced they're bad at business
yeah.
because they're creative.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Fortune 500s spend millions of dollars on creative minds, keeping them relevant,
yep.
keeping them on the edge. The business minds need the creative minds.
Yeah.
So if you are creative, you already have the edge as a business owner.
Yeah.
And when I was a talent manager, that was the main conversation I was having with my actors.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you see yourself as a business? Why don't you see yourself as an asset
yeah.
that somebody needs
yeah.
for their project to take off?
Yeah.
You know, when you walk into a room owning that power, people feel it and they want that on their project.
Well, and beyond that, it also allows you to have the confidence to not be taken advantage of,
yes.
which is whether it's the Me Too movement, whether it's the young actor or actress that becomes an addict or
yeah.
Any of those spaces, having that confidence of understanding that gives you a power to say, you know what? No, I'm not going to let you take advantage of me, whether it's financial, whether it's sexual, whether it's abusive from a power play of I'm going to put you in your place.
Yeah.
It evens the playing field to say, no, you're a director, and yes, I do answer to you
mm-hmm.
From the standpoint of what you're directing me to do, but we are equals creating this craft together.
That's right. We're both human beings,
yeah.
and you need to treat me as such.
Yeah.
And your project is not my be-all, end-all.
Yeah.
I don't care what project is it is.
Yeah.
I don't care what names are attached. If
yeah.
there's something off in my gut,
yeah.
it's not for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's such an important lesson I think more of us need to learn about having confidence in knowing what we know.
Yes, 20-something-year-old Jen needed to learn that lesson, and I'm glad that I had the time to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to take a break right here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about your projects that you have coming up. We're going to talk a little bit more about the world of creativity, and then we're going to do some rapid-fire questions. We'll be right back.
Today's show is brought to you by our friends over at Penji. Penji helps startups, agencies, big corporations, and even marketing teams achieve more with unlimited graphic design support at one flat monthly rate. Their easy-to-use online platform pairs you with a professional designer and lets you create as many design projects as you want. Think of it as your monthly subscription to top-notch design with no contracts, no hourly billing, just fast, simple, and affordable graphic design for all of your needs. Best of all, as a listener of JumbleThink, they're going to give you 15% off your first month when you use the code JUMBLE at penji.co. So head on over to penji.co, that's P-E-N-J-I.co, and use the code JUMBLE to start getting the graphic design you want and need for your business. Now let's jump back into our conversation with today's guest, Jen Lederer.
We are back with Jen, and before we get rolling, we need to know how people can find and connect with what you're doing.
Awesome. JenLetterer.com and at JenLetterer on all of the socials is where you can get absolutely everything you want to know about me and more.
And Letterer spelled L-E-D-E-R-E-R.
Yes, it means leather maker in German.
And you have a wonderful red leather jacket. Or
faux leather, everyone. Relax. It's vegan. It's vegan leather.
And so those will be in the episode notes, too. So if you missed it or you want to find it there, it's in the notes. Just check right below where you're listening.
Listen, if you're like me and you immediately forget what was just said to you, it's in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah. You're doing a lot of creative things right now, and you're launching some very creative things.
Thanks.
Let's start with your comedy. Motivational comedy. I think motivational. I think sleazy oil salesman.
Yes.
You know the people I'm talking about. They give some good stuff, but it's always about the upsell.
Yeah.
That's not what you're doing.
No.
And you're making it fun.
Yes.
So that's even better. Talk to us about what in the world motivational comedy is.
Mm-hmm.
Because that seems like such a foreign thing.
I know. And what's funny is it's everything that you already know about good comedy.
Okay.
Comedy, when done at its highest art form, simply invites you to see an old concept in a new way.
Yeah.
And motivation is that split second when you wonder, maybe this could be different. Maybe I do have what it takes. Maybe this idea is worth something. There's that break in your ego that happens in split second moments. And comedy and laughter is one of our most untapped tools. We do it, and everyone says, I love to laugh, but do we use it as a tool, just like meditation, deep breathing, yoga, any of your other ways that you kind of connect to yourself? And, you know, I was a motivational speaker for 5 years, and I got very bored.
I was going to say, I'm sorry, that's not a fun space.
Listen, it's like, oh my God, everyone's saying the same shit. We know it.
Yeah.
We know it, and yet no one's doing it.
Yeah.
So what's that about, right? Yeah. And so comedy is that bridge, that nice skepticism bridge for you to be like, but do I need to think positively? Because that sounds like some bullshit when my life is falling apart.
Yeah.
And that is, it does feel like BS to your soul when you're like, what do you mean gratitude list? Have you seen my life? But when you laugh at it, you actually do have moments where it feels true in your soul that it's okay and safe to not be stressed all the time.
When you think of comedy, one of the strengths of comedy is it's contrary.
Yeah.
It's a contrarian point of view.
Yes.
It's saying either what everyone's thinking and too scared to say, or it's saying the opposing view to bring light to, whether it's truth or a lie to break that.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think you fall in the spectrum of when you say motivational comedy? How does that actually play out?
So I think that the first one of the original motivational comedians is George Carlin.
Okay.
And he very much took the opposing viewpoints on things and really said, I mean, he did everything that you just said in the most brilliant way possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes of his is, if you try to fail and succeed, which have you done?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the kind of question. That's the kind of way I want to present something, that it's like, okay, fine. I'll meet you in your life. I'll even agree with you that it's terrible.
Yeah.
Now what can we do from here?
Yeah.
And so it's just a constant, you know, you asked me before, how do you win them over? It's meet them where they are. Meet them where they are without judgment, but also with an invitation of like, come over here. And it's a mix of my own stories, a little bit of self-deprecation, you know, because it is comedy, but then an invitation to look at it differently.
Yeah.
And think about your own power in a different way.
You're talking about people that are in moments of bleakness.
Yeah.
But this can also motivate people who are in good places, I would assume, too.
Mm-hmm.
And And the message can be the same. Like, there's still more for you. And yes. I think that people forget sometimes that whether it's good times or bad times, this is not where your journey ends. And so when you're in good times, you just think it's never going to end. And that's not anyone's reality.
Right. Everything's temporary.
Yeah. Yeah. And so bringing this into a place where it reminds people of what matters.
Mm-hmm.
How does that set them up for success? How does this bring transformation?
Well, I think the first thing that comedy does is create community.
Okay.
When you're in a room of laughter, you can't help but shift your vibration.
Yeah.
You leave the room in a different mind state than when you came in.
Yeah.
The same way you do after you walk into any transformative experience. I believe in vibrations. I believe that we all are vibrating at certain levels. Anger has a certain vibration. Hurt has a certain vibration. But joy is the highest vibration, joy and love. And when we're laughing, our walls are down and we are in our natural state, which is love.
Yeah.
And there's no way, Michael, that you can hang out in a state of love for any amount of time, 30 seconds, 5 minutes, an hour, and not transform yourself at least a little bit.
Right. And I think one of the things that fascinates me about comedy is that I think the statistic is, and I might have this wrong, that the average adult only laughs 12 times a day.
I mean, that sounds right, and that even sounds high.
Yeah, it might be kids laugh 12 times a day, but kids, I have
no,
kids, they
kids
laugh way
a
more
lot,
than that.
Yeah.
How do we lose sight of joy? Because you're talking about the vibrations of joy and love, mm-hmm. and yet it's something that, unless you come from a very bad situation as a child, most children experience joy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just built into who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And by using motivational comedy, I think you're helping to remind people of the joy they lost. And finding the joy in darkness. Just because things suck doesn't mean it has to stay there, like you said. So where along the way in the growth patterns do you think we lose it and kind of lose sight of living in this place of joy, in a place of love, in a place of compassion?
A little bit at a time. Every day it gets chipped away from when you are born all the way up through. I actually have on my left arm the word remember tattooed because that is our work, to remember that we came here.
Yeah.
We showed up here with everything we need.
Yeah.
And the world through... Honestly, through trying to be helpful, right?
Yeah.
We have adults when we're little tell us, shh, you know, calm down, now's not the time. We learn that our bigness and our laughter and being loud is often what leads us to get in trouble, mm-hmm. to be judged, to be told that we're too much.
Yeah.
And so out of safety, we're always looking to survive.
Yeah.
We learn to tone it down, tone it down, tone it down. And joy is such an explosive, unpredictable emotion that's one of the ones that we really keep a cap on very early on.
Now, you talk about that tattoo on your arm, and I'm going to go into my years of being a pastor and share something that I hope encourages you.
Great.
So in Scripture, they come to Jesus and ask, you know, what is the greatest commandment? And he says, love God and love people, basically. He said, but today I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Guard and remember this one commandment.
Hmm.
And when he said remember, it reminded me that like that's our mandate in life, is to love well. And it's hard to do that when we're constantly living in a place of brokenness.
Right.
So for you, not only are you bringing motivation, but it seems like you're helping to bring healing. The healing that you experienced in finding your journey to where you are.
Yeah.
We always ask somewhere in the show this question. It's I think, one of the most profound questions about career and vocation we can ask. And it's this. How do you find purpose in what you're doing?
Hmm. So I think the chasing of the purpose can be confusing.
Okay. What do you mean chasing of purpose? Because I look at purpose as in like a place of rest, as a place where, like, when you're operating at your fullness, that's mm-hmm. where you live.
Yeah, once you feel it, yeah. it feels like that.
Okay.
But there's a lot of people seeking that feeling.
So it's like a fight to
right.
get there.
And it's always out there. I have yeah. to get there. I have to. Yeah. So if you have this big idea, right, yeah. this business that you want to launch, this concept of motivational comedy, for example,
yeah.
people want to know, what's your why?
Yeah.
What's your big why? And yeah. the truth is, I didn't know
yeah.
at first. I have to spend time with the things that I have inklings about before the purpose reveals itself.
Well, I want to stop you there because I actually dislike the why conversation. And I think your journey is a perfect example of that.
Uh-huh.
You can't start with why until you understand who.
Right.
Like, you didn't get to your why until you had a satisfaction resting in your identity.
Yes.
And it was when you found that you found your why.
Right.
The why was an outlet for your identity of, like, I'm stepping into the fullness of who I am.
Right. I mean, everyone's purpose is the same. We're here to be mm-hmm. our full selves.
Yeah.
And that is a way taller order than any of us ever realize until you start pursuing it. And yeah. there's constant invitations to quit and to round your edges and to yeah. not trust your intuition. And I think that, like you said, when you really find or feel the purpose, it feels like home.
So maybe a better way to ask this is, how is this fulfilling you as a person in what you do? Because you're walking in that purpose, you're walking in your why.
Yeah.
And you know, I've seen your comedy. I've read through your stuff. I've seen some of the other things you've worked on. It seems like you're in a place of being where you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that feel like?
Well, the skeptic in me is like, watch out. It can't be this good. The other shoe's going to drop. And that's where all the inner work comes in, right?
Yeah,
to trust
yeah.
it. But I just love what comedy offers in ways of curiosity.
Mm.
It forces me to look at something and then wonder what I don't know about it. And wonder, another great quote from one of the acting coaches that I know said, comedy is just drama flipped on its ear.
Oh, wow.
So it's just taking something and looking at it from the side and
yeah.
saying, oh, what would that be like? And what's the lesson now? And
yeah.
what's the takeaway now? And that is how I live. That is
yeah.
how I desire to live, right? Curiosity, there's no judgment when you're curious.
Yeah.
So that feels like a decent purpose for now.
Yeah. And you said two of my favorite words, curiosity and wonder.
Uh-huh.
And I think our society, because of the oversaturation of stuff hitting us, and the availability of information, we've lost that curiosity and wonder.
That's right.
I think that's sometimes it's better not to know.
Oh my God, like, don't pull out your phone and Google it at the dinner table. Just sit and yeah. wonder.
Yeah.
Feel what it's like to
yeah.
not know.
Yeah. I don't know how old you are, and you're not supposed to ask, so I won't.
Okay, I'm 34.
Okay, I'm 38. Yeah, I'm 38.
Okay, you know you're over 35 when you forget how old you are.
Yeah.
You're like, hold on, let me think about it.
But I remember a time, and you probably do too, where you would sit around and you go, who was in that movie? Or
mm-hmm.
I wonder about this. And now it's like we just look it up. I'm notoriously bad for that, going, oh, let me find that answer.
Right, and now you don't even have to pick up your phone. You just scream to the robot
yeah.
and ask the question.
Yeah.
And then they tell you.
Yeah. I want to make sure that we talk about Jen and Marla's Ageless Adventures. I saw the promo video. I'm not sure what it is yet.
Great.
What is it?
It is a web series with me and my PIC partner in comedy, Marla Schultz.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a woman in her 50s, and I'm a woman in my 30s. And my entire life, I have been drawn to women older than me, usually by 20 years or plus.
Well, I'm going to pause you there. We're writing too many people off that could be giving us so much by not seeing people older. And I love that. I admire that you have that perspective because I think a lot of us miss that. So anyway, sorry.
Yes, and I hear from these women all the time that they appreciate that I talk to them like they're humans.
Yeah.
One of my good friends is 76 years old.
Wow.
She was a purser, which is like the lead flight attendant for Pan Am.
Okay.
Like back when it was fabulous to work for an airline.
Yeah.
And she worked for Delta, and she was an independent woman back in the day when it wasn't okay to be independent.
Wow.
When it wasn't okay to not have kids, to not get married. That's the life she was living. So I'm finding these women that have been living this off-path life way before I was, and way before it was as easy as it is now.
Yeah.
They've been paving this path for me.
Wow.
And I just learn so much. It's like a life hack to just have people of all ages, again, perspectives.
Yeah.
I'm constantly looking for, what am I not seeing here?
Yeah.
And age difference is one of the best ways to get a new perspective. So Marla and I, Ageless Adventures, is following two women in New York, two comedians that are in different age brackets and living our own adventures, and how we support each other through that and find the funny throughout all of it as well. So it's like an intergenerational Broad City. If you are familiar with that show,
I love that, because for me, I think so many people today are saying it's got to be my truth.
Yeah.
That they're not seeing how that impacts the people around them.
Mm-hmm.
And having that perspective to say, yeah, I can live the fullest life of my own.
Right.
But that doesn't degrade somebody else's life, and the value that we can bring to each other from different perspectives and different spaces, I think. I'm excited to see the first episodes, because these are the kind of conversations we need to be having.
Agreed. And when you do it through comedy, people receive it a lot easier, I think. You know, they're like, all right, yeah, this could be something. Maybe I want to have friends in different age brackets and, you know, races and religions and all of the different perspectives that are available to us.
Yeah. Let's talk about subtext.
Yes.
What is that? Because that does not give a lot away.
I know. There's a lot of subtext and subtext. It's a live show where I am on stage with two comedians.
Okay.
And we bring up on screen actual texts that people have received, screenshots that people have received that are like the kinds of texts that are like, what the hell did he mean by this? What was she trying to say by this? And we also have prompts where people text us in real time and finish like the thought.
Yeah.
So kind of Mad Libs, improv-y comedy.
Yeah.
But the point of it is to explore through a social experiment of the common denominator of what's in the room. Because when you get people flowing and just telling stories without thinking, is it funny? Is it good? Is it important? People start sharing the same type of things. The same themes come up, the same stories. And we start to see how the subtext of our energy and of our conversations are so much more alike than we realize.
Wow.
And people are experiencing things similar to us all the time.
Bringing commonality into the story.
Exactly, exactly.
Before we wrap up this segment, I want to get into your brain a little bit.
Come on in.
All right. I, you know, you hear about comedians and everyone thinks they're funny. I don't think I'm funny. I'll put that out there.
Okay. Well, that's the first step to being funny, so.
Yeah. And a lot of people say, because I'm funny, I can stand up and do comedy, which is like, and we talked about that earlier. Most comedians, especially successful ones, are craftsmen at what they put together, craftswomen at what they assemble. It is an art form.
Yeah.
How do you search and find those ideas that percolate to the top that you go, this is where I want to play, this is the idea I want to explore, this is the story I want to tell through my comedy? And then what's your process for putting that together into the craft of telling that idea, that story, that dialogue that you want to have?
Yes, I appreciate the description of craft. I think that it is. I also describe it as athletic.
Yeah.
I think comedy is very athletic. When you're on stage, you're constantly reading the room. You're constantly checking the temperature and thinking about the upcoming punchline and if it's still going to work with like the room that's
relevant right now.
Right. But the way that you find it is you have to get on stage and do it and do it and do it and do it. You have to say it out loud. You never craft a joke in your head.
Yeah.
You craft a concept in your head. I observe the world so differently now that I'm a comedian, because everything has the potential to be a bit.
How so? Like, how has that changed perception?
I'm just always looking at the relationship of what's happening in front of me, and then looking kind of back into my own log of how do I see this? What's my perspective of this? What's funny? What reminds me of my childhood, right? When I see a daughter and a dad walking down the street, anything can be a trigger for a bit. And so you're just watching. I do the same thing because I'm a producer now.
Yeah.
I watch TV differently. I look at like, oh, that's interesting how they're choosing to cut that and edit that and make those choices. It's just a constant, what choices are being made here? How do I put that through my lens, my perspective, and then formulate it into a joke? But it starts much broader than people think. It's overarching concepts that you work and you work and you work, and that's the athleticism of finding the right words and formula to make it a joke.
How much of what you do on stage is pre-planned and how much of it's spontaneous?
A lot of what I do is planned.
Okay.
I am a very prepared, rehearsed comedian. Yeah. I love comedians that can get on stage and are clearly just riffing the whole time.
Yeah.
I'm not that. I love occasional crowd work and ad libs and things that come in just from being tapped into the energy of the room.
Yeah.
But for the most part, again, trained dancer, I love rehearsal. I'm a control freak perfectionist.
Yeah.
So I'm quite prepared before I go on stage.
Yeah. We're going to circle back to the beginning. Do you miss dance?
Not professionally.
Okay.
I dance all the time. I dance in my apartment. It's how I prepare for meetings. It's how I shake off the day. It's sometimes how I work out. But I do not miss the pursuit of being a professional dancer.
You don't miss the business of it, doing
Correct.
The job.
Correct.
I know that you have a bunch of things you're starting.
Mm-hmm.
But in the long picture, where do you see this going? Where do you want this to unfold to? What's the picture you want to see when you're done? Or do you know?
I have a hard time seeing past 6 months in advance.
Okay.
I really do. I've stopped trying to think that I know. Because 10 years ago, I would have never guessed this. 5 years ago, I wouldn't have guessed this. But I know how I want it to feel.
Yeah.
And I want it to feel always like I'm trusting my intuition and following it.
Yeah.
Because I've trusted it for a long time, but then I didn't take action on what I was hearing.
Yeah.
So I just want to live a life that's bold enough to always trust that I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And even if I don't, I'll learn along the way.
Yeah.
And I think that I will be always a inspiration to people who are asking themselves, can I do it? Should I do it?
Yeah.
A lot of my fans, following, whatever you want to call them, share with me, Jen, just watching you give yourself permission to make so many pivots in your life has given me an invitation to do the same.
Yeah.
So that's kind of it.
Do you see the shifts? You use the word pivot there, and I use it quite a bit for various things in my own life and business. Do you see them more as pivots or more as building blocks to where you are today?
Pivots. And then sometimes there's a leap.
Okay.
I just did a leap.
Yeah.
I do pivots for like years at a time. Pivot, 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 right? Little, little changes. And then eventually you got to leap to the next step, the next level. So it's a mix of those leaps of faith and then those little 5-degree changes that feel like, oh, this is nothing. This isn't that important. But it is.
Yeah.
It's how I got here.
Super cool. We're going to take a break right here. When we get back, we're going to do rapid fire questions.
Great.
We are back with Jen Lederer, and we are doing rapid-fire questions. We asked this a specific way. I'm going to ask it twice in different ways. So the first way I'm going to ask is the way we traditionally do, and that's, where do you find inspiration?
Anywhere and everywhere.
Okay. Anything specific that you just go, this gets me fired up?
Watching other people shine, watching other people do what they do best.
Yeah. Now, the switch up I'm going to do here is, as a comedian, who inspires you?
Currently, Hannah Gatsby.
Okay. Cool. I'm not familiar with her, so I'll have to check her out and and
she's she's doing motivational comedy in a really, really smart way.
So there are others doing this space.
Yeah, they're just not calling it what I'm calling it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but there's definitely people doing it.
I didn't realize that. Wow, mm-hmm. That's cool. How do you define success?
Staying true to myself and never feeling like I'm in a cage.
What's one book you think every dreamer or entrepreneur should read?
The Soul Whisperer, I think it's called.
Okay.
By Michael Singer.
All right.
Yeah.
If you weren't doing what you're doing today, what do you think you'd be doing?
I mean, Michael, I've done so much.
I know. That's why I was kind of looking forward to that question.
I would be an organizer. Like, I'd come over and organize your closet and your home. Yeah, I do it for my friends all the time. I love organizing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
If you were to look back at all you've done and what has gotten you here, was there a specific moment that was a trigger to lead you to this?
Oof. Never, ever feeling comfortable in the normal way.
Okay. What is your secret habit for entrepreneurship?
My secret habit? Morning pages.
What's that mean?
So it's from a book called The Artist's Way, which is another great book that people can explore.
Yeah.
And it's just stream of consciousness writing for 3 pages.
Oh, wow.
So you just don't stop writing, and it's like a brain dump of any doubts and whatever's present. Yeah. I do that every morning, and it's very helpful.
That's cool. It's really cool. I've not heard of that before, so love it. If you were to write a picture...
Write a picture. Great.
With words. Describe it in a vivid way.
Okay.
What the perfect life for you looks like. What would it look like?
Whatever I want in that moment.
Okay.
Constant freedom.
Okay.
The freedom to change my mind is very, very important.
What lie about entrepreneurship would you like to break?
You're supposed to be successful inside your first 1 to 3 years.
I agree with that. That's the dumbest thing.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Being it for at least 5 years.
At least.
Yeah.
And then you'll fail a couple more times, and then you'll be like, I love it, though.
Our final rapid-fire question. What's one dream you're still wanting to fulfill in your own life?
More travel.
Love that. As we wrap up, we always like to leave our guests to have the final thought. For all of us listening, including myself, what would you like to say to us?
Stay in your own lane.
Okay.
And trust your instincts.
Love it. Thank you so much for taking time, braving this cold, wet,
northeast
weather.
Up, Michael. I'm less cold now, so thank you for your warmth.
Have a wonderful, wonderful career. We're going to be watching what you do and hope to have you come back and tell us about the success of all you've created.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Once again, we want to thank Jen Lederer for being on the show with us today. You can check her out at jenlederer.com. That's JenLederer.com. And you, of course, can find those links right in the episode notes wherever you are listening. On our next show, our guest is Buster Benson. He is the author behind Why Are We Yelling? The Art of Productive Disagreement. Super cool conversation. Really great guy. We're going to give you a little taste of that conversation right now.
The idea is that a person writes a book during their life of everything that they've learned. And when they die, it's published. And I just love this idea of like trying to capture in real time what you're learning. It can be a living book that, once you die, the book is sort of done. And one day, again, sort of these weird, whimsical thought experiments, I was like, what if I tried to write down all my beliefs and I published it and then I tracked it over time so that as my beliefs changed, I can actually see how they evolve. And so it started off really short. There was probably 30 or 40 beliefs on there, just like randomly, like, what do I believe about God, about aliens, about, super intelligence, all these other things that just randomly come to mind when you start thinking about belief. And then over time, adding things like political perspectives, all these things, because instead of reacting to the world that's happening, I sort of had this idea that I can always refer back to my beliefs and act proactively from there. And so it helped me be less anxious about the things happening in the world by saying, like, okay, well, before I can really get mad about this thing happening, I should consult my, myself and see, like, what do I actually think should be done? And make sure that I'm clear on that before I just bash on somebody else. So, yeah, it is all, from sort of the beliefs, to tracking my life, to thinking about bias, to ultimately becoming obsessed with argument and disagreement. They're all part of the same path of, like, how do we sort of communicate better with ourselves and with others? Yeah, this is a really interesting dynamic, because the first thing you notice if you try to do this is that you don't know what your beliefs are. And this became clear to me when I was studying cognitive bias too. There's this phenomenon known as Mott and Bailey, which is like, you know, you have one belief that's easy to defend and another sort of inferred belief that is really hard to defend. And when someone attacks the really hard to defend one, you just retreat to the easy one and stay there. And oftentimes that's one is not even something that they disagree with. So it's sort of this insincere approach to defending beliefs, because so when you write down your beliefs, though, you realize that you basically have to write down the real beliefs that you have and that you want to defend. And if those become hard to defend, you have to retreat in a more tangible, like, you can't do it insincerely. You can say, like, okay, well, yeah, I believe that acupuncture works or something like that. And if someone takes that and it's like, I disagree with that, here's some evidence, I have to change the line in my file to change it and actually represent what I really believe. So it holds me accountable. It's definitely a, tool of reflection. But what I really learned was that I don't have really deep beliefs about things like gun control, things like immigration, things like, freedom of speech, until you start to write them down. And then you're sort of forced to form those beliefs, which is great, because then you can actually stand on something and do something with that. But yeah, as far as like what has changed over time, man, I think there have been a few that I've changed, usually though in just becoming more specific by qualifying or expanding or, but there have been a few where, like, especially any that are about predictions about the future, where I'm like, okay, yeah, I was clearly wrong about that because it didn't happen. But for the most part, I can be like, okay, well, I do believe aliens exist, but I don't think we're going to discover them, is like what I might add, that kind of thing.
There is so much more to this conversation. You're not going to want to miss it. We talk about why he changed his name. We talk about working in the world of tech. We talk about disagreement and how we can productively disagree and how we can unproductively disagree. It is a super fun conversation. You're going to want to check that out. And that's coming up on our next show. And now for my final thought on today's conversation. I had a lot of fun being a part of Propelify Innovation Festival. It's always great to connect up with our friends over at Podcast Row. I hope you enjoyed the conversation we had with Jen Lederer. Here's my big takeaway. So often we are looking for absolute solutions. And what I mean by that is that we are looking for the answer to forever. What am I meant to do? What am I created to do? What is the right career for me? How should my life look? And we think that our lives are very stagnant, that they're static, they're stuck in a moment, and that once we find the thing, whatever that thing is for you, your perfect spouse, your perfect job, your perfect whatever, that is the solution forever. Now, I there are things that I think, like, if you're getting married, that should be forever. But that's not going to solve your problems. Maybe you need to work through relationship issues. Maybe you need to work through the problems that are holding you back from the perfect career. When we are looking at our lives, we should start looking at them as launching pads, that the things that we're doing today are refining us, that they're preparing us, that they're equipping us for the future that we haven't stepped into yet. The destiny and dreams that we haven't gotten to yet. And yet, when we do arrive to those moments, it doesn't mean that we stay in those moments, that we are stuck there forever, that this is our end, the end of our story. We need to, as individuals, as dreamers, as idea makers, really resolve to the place of saying, you know what? Our story is never finished. We are continuing to evolve and grow and change and become who we are created to be. And so for you, that's my final thought. Where you are today isn't where you're going to be tomorrow. It isn't the end of your story. There is so much more to be written. Don't sell into the lie that you have to arrive. Just continue to dream. Continue to chase those ideas and refine the dreams and ideas you have. Continue to build upon them and get to higher and higher levels of what you could be called to do, what you could be created for. As always, we believe you are created for amazing things, that the dreams and ideas you have matter. But until you take action, they're never going to become reality. So take small steps and continue to evolve the dreams and ideas you have. Take big steps into unknown futures, uncharted paths, and begin to step into the fullness of what could be instead of what you have today. It's your turn. Get out there, dream big, and change the world around you. Étirez-vous doucement, mais complètement. En avant, en arrière, sur les côtés. Vous êtes une autre personne. Les mères de famille, les enfants, peuvent également prendre un moment revitalisant. Dans quelques mois, lorsque vous aurez bien saisi la technique et que vous serez maître de votre corps, vous pourrez vous décontracter même en travaillant.